Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. The next case on our calendar today is A22-1095 in the matter of the welfare of the child of CDT and ASM. As you know, we are proceeding by Zoom today. Council will each have 15 minutes for your primary argument, and appellant will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. You can see the timer in the grid view. If we experience any technical difficulties, I'll ask the marshal to stop the timer and we can adjust accordingly, but hopefully we will have no difficulties during this oral argument session here today. I'll just remind anyone who's viewing the oral argument that we do not allow recordings of our oral arguments except with the express prior permission of the Minnesota Court of Appeals. However, there will be an audio recording of the oral argument available tomorrow or within 24 hours or so of this oral argument on our website. Council, you can proceed when you're ready. I'll ask that you identify yourself and the party you represent at the beginning of your argument.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Bill Thompson. I represent Chris Thompson, who is the father in this particular matter. Mr. Thompson has one child at issue in this particular matter. He is now 8 years old at the time of the CHIPS petition being filed and the brief being filed. He was 7. As the court probably reviewed, many of the facts in this particular matter were not disputed. There was a number of witnesses and exhibits provided at the time of trial. But in essence, what we're dealing with here today is a family who had some history with social services prior to the CHIPS action being filed. There was a number of reports to social services that didn't warrant any social service intervention. Those involved other children that were within this household. The household in the particular matter involved my client, his son, and his new wife, Crystal Thompson. In 2021, there was involvement by Itasca County Social Services that amounted to a maltreatment finding. That maltreatment finding is currently under appeal. As the court's likely aware, when there's a pending child protection matter, those administrative hearings are put on hold until the disposition of child protection is completed. So there'll be some time before there's any resolution on that particular matter. In 2021, a safety plan was created. That safety plan was followed by my client. It wasn't until this incident on March 30th, 2022, that social services became re-engaged and made this CHIPS petition. The incident in question involved Crystal Thompson allegedly grabbing the child by the chin and her fingernail cutting his lip. At that time, Itasca County Social Services made a determination that an emergency hold needed to be put in place. Child was placed on a 72-hour hold, and the child was then placed into foster care. My client, Mr. Thompson, everyone acknowledged, was not present when this incident occurred. He was at work at the time and then was never allowed to follow through and have the child placed in his care while he worked with social services, despite there being a DANCO in place at a criminal case that was pending at that time. That criminal case, I know it's not necessarily part of the record here today, but Ms. Crystal Thompson was acquitted of those criminal charges following a jury trial here a couple of weeks ago. At this point in time, as the court is aware, the county has the burden of proof in these matters to prove by clear and convincing evidence that one of the statutory factors was met. In this particular case, they allege 3 factors. As my brief indicates, there is not sufficient sufficient evidence to support findings under any of these statutory grounds being alleged. The first was 260C.007 subdivision 6-8, where a child is without proper parental care because of emotional, mental, or physical disability or state of immaturity of the parent, guardian, or other custodian. In this particular matter, there was no evidence presented about my client's emotional, mental, or physical disabilities. There was also no evidence that the child was without proper parental care.
Counsel, correct me if I'm wrong, but doesn't the record reflect that the child resided both with father and stepmother?
It does, Judge, yes.
And at times, stepmother cared for the child when father was gone?
Yes, Your Honor.
And so, given that the child was injured when stepmother grabbed his face and cut his lip, how did the district court, why isn't there clear and convincing evidence that the child is without proper care given that conduct by the stepmother who is parenting the child at the home? Doesn't that indicate immaturity on the part of one of the parents in the home?
So, Judge, obviously there was dispute as to the nature of the injury at the time. However, I think when you're talking about parental care under that subdivision, I believe what you're also referring to is the whether the child's being fed, clothed, housed, going to school, those types of things, and none of that was presented. In addition, I think it corresponds with whether or not the county made reasonable efforts. Obviously, with these child protection statutes, there is much overlap when you're looking at these factors. In this particular matter, Mr. Thompson, my client, was the custodial parent. Miss Crystal Thompson was the step parent. Mr. Thompson, whether the county made reasonable efforts under this matter, I think answers your question as well. Because even while the criminal case was pending, there was a Danko order in place. Social services never gave Mr. Thompson the opportunity to ensure that the child would have been protected from Miss Crystal Thompson, even if the allegations in this matter were true. They simply took the child from his care. And under that, I don't believe those are reasonable efforts, nor does it show that he was without proper parental care from his actual custodian. Miss Crystal Thompson would have.
Mr. Thompson, do you have any case law to support that we focus on the, as you're calling father, the custodial parent, and that we don't focus on the conduct of both parents who are in the household? Can you point me to a case where we've made that distinction?
Judge, as far as I'm aware, there is no case that makes that distinction. I understand the court's concern about the household itself, but I think it also goes to, under the circumstances, Ms. Crystal Thompson would have been forced to relocate out of that household because of the Danko order in place at that time. The parties and the testimony was there that the record is clear that they did have other options at their disposal. Ms. Crystal Thompson had places that she could have resided while all of these things have transpired. Obviously, the Danko is no longer in effect, but at the time that this all took place, there were other options where the county could have done more reasonable efforts to ensure that the child stayed in the care of his father.
Well, wasn't part of the concern of the county was that when they interviewed the child, that the child made some statements about when things didn't go well at school, he didn't feel safe in the entire home, not just with stepmother. I mean, I guess my question is, there is some evidence in the record that relates to father in particular?
I don't recall that being part of the record, Judge, where the child indicated that he felt unsafe. I do know that there was discussions about physical discipline. I recall specifically the discussion about the child getting the option of the paddle or having his electronics taken away. But as I indicated in my brief, I believe that's more a questioning of parenting style and not necessarily grounds for a child protection matter.
Well, except that they had the safety plan where the parents here had agreed that they were going to be restricted in their freedom to choose their parenting style when it came to physical discipline, correct?
Correct. And social worker indicated that up until this March 30 incident, and even to this day, my client never violated that safety plan. Ms. Clancy indicated, but for this March 30 incident, we would have never been back into court. And a lot of this boils down to that March 30 incident where the county is alleging that this was some purposeful act. And in many respects was, you know, I think we've all seen parents grab their child by the chin, trying to get them to listen. The fact that the child got scratched is more of an accident than some overt act of physical discipline here, Your Honors. The simple fact is this type of incident shouldn't be something that should warrant court intervention. And there was other options that would have been possible, even if they were never even given an opportunity to work voluntarily with the county in this particular instance. They were never given the option of services that could have led to the child being remaining in the home. And that's where the reasonable efforts component comes in as well. The simple fact is my client wasn't present at that time. There was no allegations that they ever followed through on the choice of paddle versus losing electronics. And in fact, Carol Clancy herself indicated that any physical discipline would have been a long time ago, as did the child when talking to various providers. And so when you look at all of these things, there isn't clear and convincing evidence. The county had other options at its disposal and refused to use those. They made a determination in part based on their understanding of a history, but that history was never vetted out. There was only the one incident of social services interaction, and even that interaction in 2021 didn't amount to a child protection matter. It amounted to working with them voluntarily and following a safety plan, which my client did by all accounts. And so under the circumstances, my client is asking for a reversal here at this point in time, based on the record clearly supporting his position that clear and convincing evidence was not met. And without any other.
So you argue that there were other services that the county could have provided. The district court found that the county offered father a case plan, but father didn't engage in the case plan. Can you explain why you believe that case plan wasn't appropriate and identify specifically what other services you think the county should have provided? An alternative?
Yes, Judge. So at the time and place of a CHIPS petition, a party is not forced to enter or work with the county until the court makes an adjudication of child protection. At that point in time, a child or a party is now court ordered to follow a reunification plan. Once that occurred, Mr. Thompson has been following that case plan in its entirety. Up until then, Mr. Thompson followed through with his right to not engage with the county We did take testimony. If you read through Carol Clancy's testimony, I asked her specifically what services that she wanted. One of them I recall off the top of my head, and I believe cited in my brief, was a parenting capacity evaluation that they wanted Mr. Thompson to undergo. I asked why the child couldn't remain in my client's care, why he underwent this evaluation. And Ms. Clancy's only response was she didn't want to do it that way. That could have been the type of evaluation that could have been done with Gage still remaining in the care of his father. And so, again, under the circumstances, none of the reunification plan or the case plan, there's nothing in there that couldn't have been done while the child was in his care. And if that would have been the case, I mean, obviously I'm speculating and I apologize for that, but with more cooperation from the county, I may have had more opportunity to actually speak to get cooperation at that point in time from my client. But at that point, with what was happening with his wife, he was more concerned about maintaining their innocence to these allegations than he was focused on cooperating with the county at that point. Thank you, Judge.
Right, thank you. Now we'll hear from counsel for respondent.
Good morning. Please, the court, counsel Michael Haig, Assistant Itasca County Attorney, appearing for the respondent. And start with the issue today. First of all, we are dealing with safety, child safety, the personal safety, sense of security, and the welfare of this seven-year-old child. And the issue that is before the court is not whether it would have decided this case differently than the district court. The issue is there substantial evidence that supports the district court's factual findings and ultimately its conclusion that this child is in need of protection, is in need of services, and it's due to the court didn't single out one single factor, but rather a multitude of factors. The petition was filed this spring following the incident at school, the investigation that followed. But it also took into account many other factors that are looked at when called to evaluate safety. On the injury, the findings show that the court did consider degree of force, the bleeding that resulted, the swelling that resulted, its excessiveness. And there is substantial evidence to support that. The court denied the claim under physical abuse, but on the issue of whether this method of correcting this child or trying to change his behaviors was excessive, resulted in injury. The injury wasn't a slight superficial scratch. It caused bleeding, it caused swelling, The court considered that. The court considered the functioning of this child in the school.
Counsel, I guess on that point, what weight do you think the district court gave and that we should give to the fact that there was an existing safety plan? Given that I think appellant correctly points out there's, one incident related to this child that ended up with the child being removed. What weight do you think the district court gave to the existence of the safety plan, and how should we look at the safety plan when evaluating appellants, when evaluating this decision?
Well, I think the record shows that's not all that the court looked at. The court looked at there was an inordinate number of maltreatment reports. There was evidence, uncontradicted, 9 work groups where the county had worked with the family, and that father took no acceptance of responsibility. There was evidence that
there was only one instance related to this particular child. How do we look at sort of the incidents related to the other children that were residing in the home when evaluating the safety for this particular child?
I think
those incidents were quite different than those allegations were quite different than the allegation here.
I hope the court defers to what is fairly apparent from the district court's findings and is careful not to retry that issue. But the court looked at what is the environment of this child in this home? Is there safe parenting, or is there blunted thinking on the part of the parents? We've got the father agreeing to a restriction. I will have no contact with 3 children that had been part of that household, and were 3 children close to this child, and that is in the record. The court is required to treat the safety, welfare, and best interests of this child physically, emotionally, psychologically. Those are paramount. And the court found that those interests outweigh, and the parents' interests yield to that. And that is in keeping with this court's analysis of child protection law. And we cite that in our brief. The court didn't single out the injury as in itself. That in itself would warrant these interventions, but rather because of it and because of its nature, it warranted protective action. And every step of the way, the EPC process, the court addressed the issue of reasonable efforts. It looked at what is going on here. This is not typical parenting, typical safe parenting at all. And so,
counsel, can you address appellant's argument that the county didn't make reasonable efforts because it didn't give father the option to work his case plan while keeping child in his care with the stepmother outside of the home?
Your Honor, I believe that issue was considered by the court. It was discussed by the court. We've got a situation where father is closely aligned with the stepmother. Putting that child back in the home would create, and the court could find a re-victimization of that child. You're to blame that she's not here to take care of you. Now I've got to find somebody else to get you ready for school and get your breakfast. And this is on you. And that's a danger in whether it's physical abuse or sexual abuse. But that is a legitimate concern when a child is this age and this dependent. So we submit that issue is in the record. The district court is mindful of that, didn't ignore it, but was foremost concerned about this child's safety, his well-being, not just physical, but psychologically. Is he safe? Look at the record of his functioning in school, fleeing from class, meltdowns, breaking out crying. This boy does have insecurities, and the proper parenting needs to make sure that those, if it's a developmental issue, are not worsened, but rather properly dealt with. And here, the record shows that it was like, almost like the straw that breaks the camel's back, that with interventions are needed. And just because stepmother's out of the house, it isn't that simple. Accepting responsibility, a person, and many do accept responsibility out of the gates. They don't say, well, I've got to wait till my trial is over. I've got to exercise my due process rights. That certainly is their right. But accepting responsibility is really vital to safety. And the court had that before it. And there's a considerable record of not just this incident, but other interventions that father has not accepted, accepts no responsibility. A reasonable fact finder could find from this evidence there is a safety concern. Interventions are warranted. Let's get to the root of where that is in parenting, parenting knowledge, parenting skills. And we submit that the record well supports the very detailed findings made by the court, and that this court should affirm. Thank you.
Counsel, just an observation. Would you agree that it's pretty rare to see an appeal on a CHIPS adjudication? We usually see the appeals at the permanency stage of these proceedings, at least in my experience.
And, Your Honor, I share that experience at it before the permanency laws. Maybe an appeal was more common, but with the permanency laws, I agree. It strikes me as rare. So I do share that observation.
Any further questions from the panel? Thank you for your argument, Mr. Haig. Mr. Thompson, you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I just want to touch on a couple of things. One, Mr. Haig on two occasions hit one of my pet peeves as a parent attorney, this acceptance of responsibility. Really what Mr. Haig is indicating is that the only way to accept responsibility is to knuckle under and just agree with everything that is being levied against it, a particular parent by the county. And that was part of the testimony both by Ms. Clancy and by the guardian ad litem. Both of them touched on that in their testimony. Mr. Thompson has an absolute right to challenge the county's petition and ask the court for findings that a child protection matter was not warranted. Yet it's being held against him then that he won't accept responsibility. Mr. Thompson in 2021, when the county was involved, did sign off on the safety plan. At that point in time, he acknowledged and cooperated with the county, followed the terms of that safety plan, and by Ms. Clancy's own admission, there was no violation by either parent up until this March 30th incident. And at that point in time, the allegation was against Ms. Crystal Thompson, the stepmother. The fact that the county speculates as to what may happen if a child is returned to the care shouldn't be part of the process. The county has the burden to show that this harm would occur before pulling a child or failing to return a child to the care, not just speculating that it may occur, because that speculation can happen in any case. Not just this one, but in any particular matter, the county can speculate. My client, even if the allegations are true, did not harm this child. The other particular thing, if I can read my notes, that I wanted to touch on was what the county seems to be doing is trying to piggyback all of these other calls that were made to social services and these staffings. Both of these parents are involved in litigious family law matters involving their other significant others. My client was awarded by court order custody of this child from his mother. Having calls made to social services shouldn't have any bearing, because as they testified at trial, a number of those calls were screened out and didn't warrant any intervention by the county. Yet the number of calls is still cited as some grounds. The 2021 incident didn't warrant a child protection matter. It warranted a safety plan. Yet it's being piggybacked, is trying to somehow use it against Mr. Thompson that this should be a child protection matter at this point. But Mr. Thompson was never given his day in court about those allegations. In fact, the court excluded, over the objection of myself and other counsel for Ms. Crystal Thompson, the conclusory statements made by the county when it came to those allegations for that specific reason. Mr. Thompson, no evidence was presented and it shouldn't be considered by the county. The issue is whether or not Mr. Thompson actually followed the safety plan, which he did. Gage was in no danger from Mr. Thompson. Gage would have been protected by a Danko order. Gage could have been protected by an order for protection. The county never asked Mr. Thompson to go and file an order for protection against Ms. Crystal Thompson. Not that it would have been necessary given a Danko was already in place, but there was no options even presented. The county made its decision the day they went to the school on March 30th as to what they were going to do. And that should be factored into whether or not reasonable efforts were actually made in this particular matter. And I think when you look at the totality of it, if we're going to start filing CHIPS actions based on every scratched lip or every little thing that potentially a parent does wrong, we are going to have a system that comes to a screeching halt. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you to both counsel for your helpful arguments today. The matter is submitted and we will issue our opinion within the expedited statutory timeline.